Make May your month for big cash winnings at your favorite Washington Gold Casino. Stop by Club Hollywood Casino Shoreline and Royal Casino Everett and see how their guests are winning thousands in cash prizes. So why not make today your day to strike it rich? Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
All right, final hour here of Brock and Salk, and always fun when we get Greg Bishop in from Sports Illustrated to regale us with his tales of interesting stories and places he gets to travel. And, you know, he's always on, like, Mayweather's plane or going somewhere cool. Are you going somewhere cool? Like, what's your next schedule? What's the next ticket
that you have? Brett Favre on the ATV right. Around the farm.
Yeah, what do you have booked now? Where's your next flight?
It's actually not that exciting. I have two stories upcoming in Los Angeles that'll take me down there. It's always a fun trip, though, and my wife always accuses me of, like, making up a story in L.A. so that I can go down and see my
friends.
Why
wouldn't you do that? Yeah. I mean, that seems like a fair accusation. That's exactly what you should be doing.
And when you got an eight-month-old boy that's spitting up all over people and living rooms and everything else, isn't that what you want
to
do?
I got to go to Los Angeles, to L.A. I don't know. Sorry.
And not only once, but like three times in a month.
Well, so you got to do follow-up. I mean, Jesus. Yeah. You know, this is a hard deal. Hey, we wanted to bring in talk about the story that it's out in the magazine already. When it comes out online.
Friday,
okay. And this is, I get to read it last night. It was really cool. An in-depth sort of behind-the-scenes profile of you hanging out with Jake Locker, who is such a big name around here, and yet still shrouded in a little bit of mystery the way he walked away. He's also going to be a guest on Brock's Above and Beyond podcast.
Season 2, baby, episode 1, a week from tomorrow.
Is he episode 1?
Draft. He is going to start it out.
So that will be
a week from Thursday.
Yes. So also 8 days away, much like the draft.
Yep.
You can go to 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app for that. And to warm up for it, to get your full Jake Locker fix,
you can read
Greg's piece in SI. What'd you learn about Jake?
You know, it was really interesting. I reached out to him more than 2 years ago, probably. And I tried his father. I tried his agent. I tried multiple different avenues to get him to do a story because, you know, he had a lot of injuries in the NFL, but he's the earliest of first-round guys walked away, you know, in recent memory. There's nobody that's even close. And I really wanted to explore the why of that. You know, was it just the injuries? Did he not really want to play football in the first place? And he just called me randomly one day last summer and said, basically, what do you want? And I said, let's just meet. So he invites me a couple weeks later up to Bellingham. We met at a Chipotle at the mall food court, which I thought was fitting. I said in the story, it's like the one place no one goes for more than 20 minutes is like where he wants to meet. He buys me lunch. We talk for 2 hours. And then at the end, he says, I don't know if I really want to do this. And I said, well, what would make you feel comfortable? You know, what do we do here? Because I'm not trying to hijack your story, but you just told me your whole life story, and I have a great piece right now, you know? And he says, I want God to be the main character in the story, which is obviously hard, you know, to do for me. And then he says, if you want to come watch football at my house, you've got to bring your family. And at that point, my son was 2 months old. My wife hates football. She went to UW. We have no idea who Jake Locker is. And I'm like, dude, this is like one of the most famous athletes from your school. And so we went up there one Sunday and just hung out all day. I actually didn't interview anyone that day. I just interviewed his father. And basically what emerged from all this interaction was a story that was totally unexpected to me, that Jake Locker did not leave football because he didn't love the game itself, and he didn't leave football because he was hurt a lot. He left football because he felt like he had prioritized the wrong things in his life, and there were certain moments that really crystallized that for him. And he left football because he put faith and family above the game, which is, you know, I quote Matt Hasselbeck in the story. He says that every guy in football says that their priorities are faith, family, and football, and that no one lives it. He said zero people, and that Jake did.
Were you ever taken aback? Was there a moment in that time, either at Chipotle or... Yeah, you're a local guy. You've been around it. You know his story very, very well, even if your wife didn't. And then as you spend the day with him, is there any moment you're like, gosh, I've covered a lot of guys. I've written a lot of stories. Is there ever anything now that just kind of stops you in your tracks?
Yeah, you know, the kindness that he exhibited toward me stopped me. And that might sound like a small thing, but usually I show up to these houses and there's like 15 people there. And it's the publicist and three of the childhood friends. And they've all read stories I've written, and some of them they didn't like. It's just like a... You're navigating all these things. Like, Jake Locker showed up by himself. He extends a hand to me, and he says, I'm paying for lunch. And then he like, puts the table, the umbrella, so that there's shade. And he's telling the guy behind the counter, that Queso is so amazing and that he's so glad they added it. And I don't know. He just seemed like a really good guy. Like, it, in a way where, like, I don't get that a lot.
He's so nice.
Like, is he so nice? Too nice for the NFL?
I think what he didn't like was, like, everything around it. You know, he talked a lot about, you know, there's some stuff in the story that I think hasn't been out there about how he drank a lot in college. And at the time, he didn't really know what it was, you know. He was just sort of, like, doing what his friends did, and, like, it didn't really affect his performance. But, like, it was significant enough where he'd wake up without remembering what happened the night before. And, you know, essentially what he came to realize later is he was struggling with this idea of him as a savior, the Jake 316 shirts, the sort of idea that he was so clean cut and perfect, and we want our star quarterbacks, I mean, Brock, you know this, to be a certain way. Like, they have to act a certain way. They have to live a certain way. They're held to an impossibly high standard and paid accordingly. And I think he didn't like that part of it. I don't think he liked dealing with people like me. I don't think he liked doing appearances. I don't think he liked having to be corporate and having the team tell him, you got to act and say a certain way. You know, you can't be like yourself, really. And I think that there are a lot of players in the NFL who love the game of football but don't love the machinations, everything around it. And I think that there are plenty of guys that love that stuff, but there is a larger segment than we believe that doesn't.
When I read it, Greg, and Greg Bishop here with us from Sports Illustrated, you can read this piece now in the magazine. It'll be online starting on Friday. When I read it, my mind flashed to Todd Marinovich or others sort of in the Todd Marinovich mold, or Ryan Leaf, even those two names, and thinking that Jake was trying to avoid becoming those guys, and that he saw them as a cautionary tale, and he walked away and changed his life. Not that he had gotten to that point. I mean, you even put in the piece that, you know, other people around were like drinking. I don't know. He was like any other college student. There was nothing over the top about it. And there wasn't drug use or anything else that would sort of lead you to believe he was out of control. But that he looked at the whole thing and said, if I stay in this and try to deal with the pressure, I'm going to turn into Ryan Leaf or Todd Marinovich or whatever. And I'm getting out now before that happens.
Yeah, I think it was definitely on his mind that there was like a worst case scenario. You know, I would say, the way that he framed it to me is that the turning point is kind of key here, right? He's after his rookie season in Tennessee, he is invited by Matt Hasselbeck to this sort of Christian church conference, and he's sitting in the audience listening the very first day to the very first speaker, who's this guy, I think it's pronounced Lecrae. He's a Grammy Award-winning hip-hop artist who does a lot of, Christian rap. And so he's listening to him talk about his life and how he had the wrong priorities and how he tried to keep it real too much, and he's internally saying, this is exactly what I've been feeling in my head this whole time. I have not been a good husband. I have not been a good father. And this is all relative. It's him in his own head saying that this is like he's done too much with football. He spent too much time in football, and he just doesn't feel right about it. And so then he starts to get hurt, and it's like every year there's something else. And it's not just that he's injured. It's that while he's injured, he can sit there and think about his priorities and what he feels like he hasn't done. And he just starts to feel like, this is the way he phrased it to me, like inauthentic, like he wasn't being real with people. Yep. And the way he compensated for that was by shutting off reporters, having a sort of like, fading from public view and drinking. And I think what he realized was like, he didn't want any of those things. And he felt like for him, and he said a million times, this is my story only. Do not project this onto like Patrick Willis or all these other people that retired the same time he did. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, basically he just finally felt like the life he wanted to live centered around family, and he couldn't be as good a quarterback as he wanted to be if he didn't choose to step away.
You know, it's interesting, Greg, is the timing of this, right? You called and checked in, said, hey, you know, any chance we can chat a little ball? And we'll get to some other stories here. And literally, Jake and I taped our podcast about a week ago. Here was actually Jake talking about exactly what you said, maybe something that others had never heard, that coping mechanism that became drinking in his life.
My first year in college, I didn't. And after my first year, I was 19. I turned 19. I was young, so I turned 19 after my first year in college. And we went up to Canada, and I was legal, drank for the first time there. And that really began that was the entry into kind of this party life that I lived. I don't know if a whole lot of people knew I did while I was in college. or to the extent that I did when I was in college. And I think that was a time when it became a coping mechanism for me to be somebody that I, to kind of get away from some of those pressures for at least a night, and not feel like I had kind of the weight on my shoulders that I did feel at times.
And then ultimately he does step away, right? So I guess we kind of finish this Jake story this way. And ultimately he steps away and people ask, is he content? Right? Because others have called. Other teams have called through the years. He told us in the sit down, like, there's no way I could go back and do it for the money. There's just no way. I'd have no integrity. Everything that I have said, everything that I believe wholeheartedly now. And as you sat with him, and you spent, you know, this time, is he content being away from this game that he is gifted to play?
He is content. That was totally my takeaway. And I put this in the story because it struck me as like the strangest question that anyone has ever asked me when I'm writing a story. And he was like, if you walked away from Sports Illustrated and you made the money that I did, people would care. And I'm like, no way. Like, you know, like, who would care about my writing gig at the failing Sports Illustrated, you know? Like, I mean, it was just like you could tell that, like, when he's lining all these dots up for me, this is what happened with the conference. This is what happened with the injuries. This is what happened, why I decided to step away, why I told my agent, don't call me with a single offer. I don't want to know which teams reached out. I don't want to know what they want me to do, whether it's a bridge quarterback or a backup. He'd still be in the league right now if he wanted to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he's lining all that up to show me this is why I left. And I think that's why he had my family to his house, to show me that he wasn't running away from the NFL, but he was running toward this thing. And
you can believe that and not believe it all at the same time, though. Like, I mean, this is a tough one for me.
This is complicated for you.
Because you can also look at Jake Locker and everything he just said and say, yeah, he was built to be incredibly good. There's a lot of pressure on him. People held him to really high expectations, and he wasn't very good. He wasn't that good when he was in college. He didn't win nearly as many games as he was supposed to. His accuracy was awful. He was super athletic, and he ran well with the ball, but it also got him hurt a lot. He could not handle really complex defense or offensive schemes. And eventually, he was drafted way too high, and he ended up failing in the NFL. And I say that trying to be as dispassionate as possible about Jake's story, because he's the nicest guy in the world. But you can look at this story both ways.
But the league would still want him. The league would absolutely
still
want him.
They would still want him. But I could also understand that the pressure got to him. Hey, look, I know I'm not as good as everybody's making me out to be. I'm supposed to be Jake 316. I'm supposed to be Washington Savior. I could have gone number one overall. I don't want to go number one overall, even if I can make an extra $30, $40 million. I'm not good enough for that. Watch me play. Don't just focus on my ability. Watch me play.
I would say even if all that was absolute truth, you know, like I maybe would quibble with a few things there, but even if that's the baseline, there's still quarterbacks in the league right now that are older than Jake Locker is that have been making $2 million a year from then and in perpetuity.
And there's also a Nick Foles, Mike, that couldn't play. Yeah, Couldn't play anywhere. Can't play even his first game in Philly. And then all of a sudden, right time, right place, right belief, right people around him, wins a world championship.
Yeah, but I think Nick Foles always believed that he could play. The pressure on Nick Foles was never to be the number one pick in the draft. If you're Jake Locker and the pressure has always been building on you, you're supposed to be like this, and you're never living up to that pressure, I could absolutely see why he walked away from that.
But once you get in the league, Nick Foles was second-rated passer that year and signs a deal and just doesn't live up to it. And it's out. Like, I'm out on the NFL. Yeah. Nick Foles was Jake Locker. Told his friends, family, right? Really grew in his faith, and I am out on the NFL.
Right.
I am done. Yeah. And then Philly says, no, you know, we like you. We know you. We have a relationship. Come here. And he comes in, and at the right time, the right place, wins a world championship. It does it in a superhuman way to some, right, with his level of play in the playoffs and the Super Bowl. So it is fascinating.
If you read the Sports Illustrated cover story off the Super Bowl, you would have seen Nick Foles took a fishing trip last summer or two summers ago where he basically texted people and said, I'm done. Yeah. You know, it's over. And then here he is, you know, having.
But did he think he was done, or did he think the league was telling him you're done? I mean, he wasn't walking away. He was being told you're basically done because nobody really wanted him.
He had a job offer on his way home from the mountains. Yeah. You know, like he had a text from Andy Reid. He texted him back. Then he's in Kansas City, and then he's in Philly. I think there's just a distinction to draw. Like,
right?
Do you like could those guys have continued to play in the league and you hit the right situation and then things work out? I think that's a feasible thing. Now the question is, do you want to be better than that, realize you can't be, and that's why you step away.
Jake's the nicest guy in the world, and everybody in town loves him. And I'm not gonna win any friends saying that Jake Locker wasn't very good, but Jake wasn't very good.
Yeah, but it comes down to the last time this fun conversation was kind of the Oregon State coach that walked away, too. Like, what are you doing? How are you possibly – there's got to be more to it, and there may be more. But this was Jake. You referenced one more quick cut.
Sure.
Jake from our podcast saying exactly what he said to you, and that was, yeah, man, I'm very clear with where I feel I want to be in the NFL, and that's out.
No, I actually told my agent, I said, thankful for what you guys have done, but unless I tell you different, I don't want to hear about anything. I'm making this decision, and it's my permanent decision. There's not a situation that would change my mind, and I tell them I'm grateful, but I don't want to entertain it.
Yeah, one tiny little nugget, too, morsel, is we finished this. And with all these guys, I say to them the same thing. I said to Dabo Swinney the other day, and he gave me a very similar response to Jake, say to others. And I said, before we ever publish this, you'll get it. Mm. This isn't that I got you. I'm not trying to do anything here. I want to make sure you're comfortable with everything that goes out. And Jake said very clearly to Boy Howdy and I, like, nope. What I said is what I said. I believe everything I said. I don't need it to read it. I don't want to edit it. What it is what it is, and you put it all out there. And it's kind of fascinating. I'm curious with you, as you crafted this piece, did you have to send it to him? Were there a lot of revisions? Was there a lot of back and forth?
Yeah, we're actually not allowed to send stories to people because they always flip out, and they want to change and sort
really?
Of massage what they said. I offered what I usually offer somebody that's going out on a limb for me, which is to go through the piece with him, to tell him what's in there, to read him parts I think might be sensitive. He did not want to do that, and even more to the point there, I asked him for people I should speak with which I do with every person that I write about, because I'm usually 20 to 30 phone calls a story in addition to the reporting. Mm. And he said, I don't want to shape what you're going to find out. You tell me who you want to talk to, I'll get you the numbers. That's never happened to me. Mm. In the 100 of these, I've done.
He's definitely a unique guy, man. There's no doubt. When you talk about Jake Locker and his story and the things he said and things he's done and the way he's lived it, he is definitely a unique human.
And you know what? And I honestly saw, and he would do this if he was sitting here.
Yeah,
he would love your perspective. He would.
That's fine.
He wouldn't sit there and go. And when he was in this building and everything else, I think you came in, introduced yourself. There's no vendetta. There's
not nothing. Zero. He's the nice. When I make fun of everybody saying he's nice, I'm making fun of them, not him.
And the beauty of you and the way you're wired, like you came into this, you didn't have any of the background, any of the story, anything else. You're like, yeah, I just don't think he throws it well. Like,
right.
I just don't think he's that accurate, and I don't think he's going to be great in the NFL. And I don't think he would have one qualm
with
you.
He's like the textbook thing that NFL scouts get all excited about but is never going to work.
Yeah.
Like, he's textbook to that. I don't think he read defenses well at all. I don't think he was very accurate as a quarterback. And when he ran around, he tended to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really bad combo for being a long-term success in the NFL. And everything else that comes off of it is a sort of the weird confluence of that story and his unique personality, which I think you've uncovered incredibly well, both you guys, in the SI piece and in the Above and Beyond podcast. You guys uncover this guy who's totally unique.
Yep.
But would all of those things have happened if he was also having success in the NFL?
Right.
If he had gotten to Tennessee and immediately started winning? If he'd been to the Super Bowl in his second season, like Russell told everybody last night over and over again? Would we have had the same conversation about this and him walking away?
I can tell you what he said.
Maybe we would.
Yeah, I mean, I addressed that directly in the story, like, because I said, what if you'd played for the Patriots and you were just, winning Super Bowls? What if you'd never been injured? And he says he wouldn't change anything. No, I know that it would, you'd look at that and say, of course, that's what he would say.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And he might be right. Maybe he would have. Maybe ultimately it just would have been too much for him and he would have said, I'm out on all this. But
fascinating.
Yeah, and then the other side of it is the very real issue, Brock, that you and I have talked about a lot, which is the amount of pressure and criticism that these guys have to face.
Yes.
And Jake handled it in his own unique way, drinking a little bit, although it sounds like just a little bit, but to him a lot.
Yeah.
And then eventually opting out of the entire conversation. But we've seen, Josh Rosen and
welcome,
Baker Mayfield.
Welcome to these guys.
Right. Absolutely.
Welcome to this crop of characters that now gets to step into this fold.
Yeah.
And a bunch of them will be overdrafted. All right, and Josh Allen from Laramie, Wyoming, and what he's bringing to the table, and Baker Mayfield, what he's bringing to the table, and what Josh Rosen, and he's bringing to the table. Yeah, man, this is... This,
well, and what was this... the kid at UW, Siler Miles, who ended up walking away from it as well also because he couldn't handle the pressure that he was under. And and I'm not saying that as a sign of weakness because I'm not sure that it is at all. I mean, I think that there it means that you're probably not cut out to be a big-time NFL quarterback. But I don't know whether it's a sign of weakness to have to succumb to dealing to all of the grief and all of the pressure that is put upon these guys.
Yeah, Jake sort of he mentioned that like he had like what he thought were not great relationships with the local press in Tennessee, and it was partly because he read what they wrote. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, his last season, he has this incredible game to open the year against I want to say the Chiefs, and there's like 266 passing yards, two touchdowns. It's everything he thought it could be in like a new offense under a new coach. And then he reads everything about how great he is. The next week he struggles against the Cowboys, historically bad first half by Tennessee standards, and ultimately he reads that too.
Yep. Reads a little bit of everything, and it is a great read. I couldn't put it down. It was late last night when I started reading it, and it's a long piece, but it is really well done, Greg, as so many of yours are. Really, really well done. Can we hit on Humboldt real quick?
Yeah, and then let's see if we can move on.
Yeah, I just...
It's so sad.
We couldn't even touch the topic. And we had a couple people on Twitter say, kind of... disappointed that you guys didn't even touch on the topic, but I don't think any of us, I didn't have any words for it. How can you put that story into words?
Yeah, so this was the kind of thing where sitting at home on Monday, I just got done covering the tournament. My wife's already not happy with me, and they call me and say, get on a plane and go to Humboldt, Saskatchewan, where a bus crashed carrying a team from there and that killed ultimately 16 people. And this happened like 2 days before. I don't know anybody in Humboldt. I don't know how I'm going to get there. And I just got on a plane, flew there, drove through the night from Saskatoon. It was so desolate that I didn't turn my brights off for the 70-minute drive. And then you get to this town, and there's one hotel, 10 news trucks in the parking lot, and you just go about interviewing these people. And, you know, it's one of those assignments that is always hard, but it's particularly hard now that I have a kid. And I ended up doing 25 interviews, and I filed at 3 a.m. on Friday.
Heaviest story you've ever covered?
Yeah, for sure. I was sitting with the team chaplain on Thursday morning at my hotel. We were having coffee before breakfast, and we were talking about the New York Times and how I used to do this kind of stuff a lot, whether it was the wild animals killed in Zanesville or Junior Seau's suicide. I covered a lot of death for the Times. That was like one of my beats, I guess. And he said, do you miss it? And I actually started tearing up, and I said, since I had a kid, this is so much harder to do. And it's nothing to say those things weren't traumatic. But, like, this story was, like, one that, I mean, I haven't been sleeping well since I got back, and it stayed with me. I was sitting with the father at Tim Hortons having coffee, and he's telling me he felt compelled on the Thursday before the crash, the night before, to tell his son how much he loved him and how proud of him he was. And he's not sure why, and he feels like it's fate. And then the son gets to the doorway, and he's leaving for the night, and he says to his mom, Mom, I think this is going to be our last game. Because they were facing elimination, but obviously last game for the... I mean, it's just haunting is, I guess, the best way to describe it.
All right. Let's say it's awful. I mean, I'm with you, man. Ever since having kids, I cry like every other day. Get ready for the rest of your life. If you haven't been crying, you're going to start.
Yes. So,
everything makes me cry. Kids movies and sad stories. And this one's really awful, man. Yeah. And our heart certainly goes out to everybody affected by what happened for that team. Just awful. Anyway.
People can donate. You know, they got a GoFundMe, third largest ever, largest in the history of Canada. Wow. Easy to find online.
Hey, as long as Greg's here, we'll have him stick around, talk some football. As we've said, the Seahawks with a lot of big decisions to make here in the next 8 days before the draft. Greg Bishop's in hanging out. It is Brock and Salk.
Heritage Distilling's BSB Lounge at the ballpark. Award-winning spirits, including BSB and BSB 103. Brown sugar bourbon at 103 proof. Throw your tongue the heater. You can't spell baseball without the BSB Lounge. Heritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
We got Greg Bishop in with us from Sports Illustrated. Text message 710-710. Help! Help! I can't find the Greg Bishop, Jake Locker story. I searched SI.com. Can you tell me where to find it, please? You might actually have to go to the newsstand and buy SI or wait until Friday.
Or go to your dentist's office. I'm sure they got it there.
Just make a dentist appointment and go in. Wait for a little while and you'll be all set. All right. Greg is in with us. You can read that story starting on Friday on SI.com. Or you could spend, how much does it cost to buy a single issue?
$7?
Six bucks to buy an issue of SI?
So. You know, I actually don't know, but I have 12 subscriptions myself.
You don't know how much it costs?
Well, I pay for them yearly, and I get it for, like, even my buddy owns a burger place. Shout out Wibbly's. You know, I even got them a subscription.
I wonder what it costs to just get a single issue of
SI. $5.99.
Is it really? That seems really pricey.
Don't worry about it.
All right.
Okay, it's beautiful.
I'm sure it is, but it seems pretty expensive for something that's online for free.
Well, I got two stories in this week, so, you know, hopefully that'll make
it
worth their while.
Big week for Greg. All right. Let's talk about this for a moment or two, because Brock and I had this on the show. We didn't get to it earlier, but I wanted to, because it ties together three or four of the bigger stories that are kind of on the minds of Seattle fans. And Greg, you're the perfect person to talk about this with. And that's the idea of endings and how storylines and careers and relationships in a city can come to an end. We're watching it, I think, with Earl Thomas, or at least the very real possibility of that Seahawks-Earl Thomas relationship coming to an end sometime within the next 8 or 9 days, unless they're able to work out a long-term deal. The Russell Wilson relationship is one that has gone through a lot of changes in the last couple of years, and he's a year away now from another contract negotiation that will set the scene for how long Russell is here in Seattle. And I think it's going to be a really long time. I don't think this is the end there, but I think there's a little conversation that we saw the end of Sherman. We saw the end of Bennett. Tom Brady is not committing to playing in 2018 after the Seth Wickersham hit piece. No, it's not a hit piece, but wherever Seth goes, bad things seem to follow because he's unearthing a lot of the drama that goes on behind the scenes. And we'll see whether that can end well with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and no more backup quarterback. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, here in Seattle, come back to Ichiro, who, you know, he's probably not going to end for Ichiro today. I think they're gonna send down Ariel Miranda. They're probably gonna bring back Ben Gamble at that point, and then on Sunday, when you bring up Erasmo Ramirez, you can send down a pitcher. But at some point, Ryan Healy's coming off the DL, and you got a very real choice to make with Ichiro, and there's probably only one legitimate choice you can make. So, do things ever really end well? How do you make it happen?
I just think it's so rare, you know, in sports. Like, you could think of the guys that it really ended well for, count on one hand, you know. You're thinking of your John Elways, you know, people that win a Super Bowl and retire and segue into real life. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy like Peyton Manning. I mean, he didn't play that well that year, but, you know, won a Super Bowl, bowed out.
But that ended in you know, where he's most known is in Indy, not in Denver.
Right.
That ends in kind of an awkward way.
It was tough in Indy. Yeah, it was tough in Indy for him.
Brett Favre ends. I mean, like, all of it's amazing how hard it is to end these stories well.
I think that's part of, like, you know, I think that's really pronounced in sports, and it's partly because of the money involved and partly because the things they're doing are athletic. And, like, obviously, as you get older, you're less, you know, adept at that. I see this a lot in boxing, where I write a lot, where it's inevitably a sad end. I think Manny Pacquiao will be one of the sadder stories in sports, and I bet I'm writing it in 10 years.
Yeah,
he stopped working with Freddie Roach, his longtime trainer, for this fight. He shouldn't be fighting at all, and he's going to fight in Malaysia. Mm. I just think that it's sort of an inevitability there that, like, is partly because athletes are wired to never stop, to never quit. They're wired to go as long as they can.
Admit they're not what they used to be. I mean, very few can do that. Felix is going to be another one, very possibly here in the years to come. Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes what your greatest strength can also become some of your greatest weakness when it comes to some of them. And I guess in particular here, Greg, it's been the topic du jour with Earl Thomas and everything that you've watched unfold over the few months, right? With Richard gone, with Bennett gone, with so many of these components gone, what do you do with Earl?
You know, to me, this is like one of the most fascinating stories in the NFL, if not in sports right now, is you have a defense that was historically good. You know, you're talking about comparisons to the Purple People Eaters in terms of how many years they were top whatever in scoring D.
Yep.
You're talking about a few future potentially Hall of Fame kind of players on the same defense at the same time. And to watch it be dismantled in real time with Twitter and social media in 2018, to me, it's fascinating. And Earl in particular, because I think the reason that you still see him on that roster right now is because he's the best player, you know, right now at this time of all the guys that they've either jettisoned, traded, or, you know, let walk. And I think that presents him a conundrum because there aren't too many safeties in the league that have Earl's range. that have his speed that can cover as much of the field as he does, freeing up other defenders to use in your scheme. I just think that that makes it tricky, even if what he did with Garrett was 100% wrong, and it obviously didn't go over well, and you are remaking this historically good unit. And so to me, it's a real conundrum for a guy like John Schneider to be able to figure out what to do there.
Why do you think it's being dismantled?
You know, I think there's a couple things in play there. I think one of them is you got to look at the end of Pete's tenure in New England. There were reports, and I've had guys tell me that, you know, that he sort of lost the room. You know, guys stopped showing up to meetings. They stopped listening to the message. You know, I was with Michael Bennett all fall last year, so he never ran, unfortunately. But, like, he was telling me he read books during team meetings last year. Like, that was, like, he said it just kind of normally.
That's great.
Because
that's
awesome. he'd heard Carroll say the same thing over and over for 7 years.
All right, Mike. What's up, dude? Yeah. Thanks, bud.
I think the idea behind that is that, in some ways, like, your message can get stale when you're dealing with the same people year after year after year. I think it's also they were so far up against the cap last year that they're letting Dwight Freeney go to save, you know, $100,000 a week. I think that they needed some flexibility there to address what we've talked about on this program a few million times and the offensive line.
Yeah.
And I think they're looking at, they still have two cornerstones if they want to build around them on both sides of the ball. You got Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner. And, you know, I think that there's this idea that teams have windows, players get older, teams dismantle, and life goes on. It's just interesting because this group was so good.
You're so taken aback right now.
I'm still stuck on the Michael Bennett thing. I'm sorry.
He's just reading books.
I'm still stuck on the whole Michael Bennett
thing. How many stories don't make it? So how much time did you invest in that deal?
Oh, man, it's brutal. I'll give you the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah.
I was with Bennett 5 or 6 times during the fall. I went to the youth detention center with him. I went to his 11-year-old's birthday party. Which was like the same week that the McNair stuff came down. I watched that game with his family in the suite. They were super helpful. Him and I had dinner a couple times. We talked a lot about Las Vegas. The week the story was supposed to run was the week that we ran our piece on Jerry Richardson and what happened in Carolina, so they needed to free up space.
Mm.
It was also the week after Jacksonville when he had that personal foul at the end that sparked the sort of on-field melee.
Yep.
And I think those two things combined to have it hold. I will revisit the material.
it's not going anywhere.
There will be a Michael Bennett story in Sports Illustrated at some point, hopefully before the season. But, it was an unfortunate series of events. And those hurt. You know, that's like a crawl under the covers kind of thing, you know. That's probably 2 weeks of my life that, you know, you don't get back.
So, and it's funny, Salk.
You just dropped a big piece of knowledge based on it, so there's something that came out of it.
But you look at it and say, come on, Michael, what you doing?
Yeah, it's also come on, Pete, and come on, John. How did you let it get to this point?
That's exactly
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'm shaking my head at the whole thing. Everybody gets some blame.
That's why I think that's part of this, though. Part of it is them saying, like, look, we got to remind you guys who's in charge here. Not only do we want to get younger, and not only do we still have good players, but we're gonna, like, Pete Carroll's in charge of this team, and John Schneider's going to put it together, and we can't have so many guys that are saying, I'm going to do it my way, and I'm going to come up to Jason Garrett after a game and say, come get me, and I'm going to openly question the coaches on the other side of the ball in public, and I'm going to, you know, all these things are happening that you just don't see a lot of places, and when you have 15 of them, you have to address it.
Yep, and that's the dismantling. It's so fascinating.
Yeah, look, man, the blame's got to go back to Pete and John on that, too. You know my theory on, for the most part, teams that I generally don't blame players because they are who they are.
Yep.
Players are, like, if your player doesn't perform well, either he's not the right player and you should have picked somebody else or not re-signed him or not signed him or not traded for him or not drafted him, or you didn't coach him the right way.
Right, and not only that, but they encourage those guys to be themselves. It's the celebration of uniqueness. Like, how many times have we heard that?
Not be yourself by reading a book in the middle of the meeting. Oh, man.
I'm going to bring a book next time I'm on here.
That'd be great, yeah. We already have Groz for that. All right. Coming up next, let's answer your question. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Text message. Greg is the absolute best. I could listen to him all day. He needs to be on way more often, unless it also makes his wife really mad. 710-710. You ask his questions, we'll answer them next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. And you know what would be fantastic is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
All right, let's answer questions. We do it every day at 9:45. Greg Bishop is in from Sports Illustrated hanging out with us. He can answer questions as well. Let's see what we got from the people today. We got a torture question. You like good torture questions? If you had to choose one of these tortures, what would it be? To swim across an Olympic pool that had a great white shark in it, or to run across a football field with a lion on it? Definitely the lion.
I feel like I can negotiate with the lion.
Right.
Great white, I'm in totally his turf. Like swimming, talking, manipulating, moving.
You don't have a chance.
Functioning.
Plus you're going to drown as part
of
it.
I think you die either way. So the shark's probably the quickest death. I'd take the shark.
Interesting.
Who would you take on between the two? I would definitely take on a lion. I just walk into a building and close the door and I win.
You have to get across the football field.
Listen, smarty pants.
No, I just open the door. I
that's
just
not
get
the
into
question.
A door and then I win.
No, that's not. I mean, don't get in the water and you're probably pretty safe from the shark.
I'm with you on that. Don't get in the water.
It's a good reason I don't.
Can I ask you a writing construction question?
Sure.
What's the most difficult part of the story to write? The intro, the body, or the clothes?
Definitely the lead. I mean, sometimes I'll start at the end because then you can sort of work everything toward where you know the end is going.
Really?
But I spend a day on the first like 800 words, and my wife will tell you that I'm like in my office. She'll just hear me swearing no to leave me alone.
The intro, that's fascinating. Some similarity with our show sometimes.
I mean, I would think, right? It's pretty important. It's usually the only thing most people read.
Like, yeah,
you've got to make it good.
You can't lose people up top.
Right.
It's funny. We put together a show every day. And I think by and large, like a lot of the bodies there, but trying to figure out right out the gate, man, what is the intro? Which story is it? Which way, right? I think we probably spend the most energy in that regard as well.
Next question. Jerks, how bad would you be at dating nowadays?
Interesting question.
Brock thinks he'd be pretty good. You think you'd be pretty good at dating nowadays?
You're on the radio, right? You know, played in the NFL.
Right. You get a lot of things working in your advantage.
Right.
You look pretty good for 42. I mean, there's a lot of things working for you. 43 now, right?
I would be horrible. Horrible. I'd lock myself in a room and be done. No chance.
I mean, there's a lot of things that are easier now, right? I mean, you don't have to actually call anybody. You don't have to really ask people out the same. Like, there's a lot of things that have gotten much easier about
dating. You feel like you know somebody today? I was asking maybe a 15-year-old daughter. You feel like you really know when all you're doing is texting? You're just texting. Do you really know this person? I mean, do you feel like, you know, you can get to know somebody? I guess we've got a couple. Howdy's accounted for. Kyle's accounted for. Lydia, in dating in this day and age, do you feel like you can get to know somebody just as easily as you could 10 or 15 years ago?
Oh, I'm listening. You waved at me, but I'm just ignoring it because I just don't do it. I just don't participate in dating.
Joey,
because it's too difficult, yeah.
Should the Joey Donuts answer that, the intern, or is he accounted for?
Do we know? I don't know.
Joey's accounted for.
He's accounted for, too. So jeez. Next.
Next question.
Lydia, I saw the picture you had of all the books that you were reading that were preventing you from dating.
Not preventing me from dating, just, yeah, no. You're taking this out of context.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I wasn't. You posted a picture of all the books, all the sports books you were reading, and said, "This is why I'm single," right, or something close to that.
Yeah, it was a joke, but a little tongue in cheek. But yes, you're right. I've got other things to do that are more important to my time.
Dangerous waters. Dangerous waters.
I feel like we made Mom mad.
Don't make Mom mad.
Seriously,
ever.
Mom's really mad at us again today. Well, Lydia, have you been more mad at us recently? Do you think?
No, absolutely not. I don't really experience anger.
How about Jay Slam?
Have you been more disappointed?
Is Jay Slam more mad at us?
As a group? As an entity? I don't know. I hope not.
I think your next story, Greg, should be on Jay Slam. I
kind of agree.
Yeah. Familiar with Jay Slam?
You should interview Bob about it.
Okay. Jay Slam is the power brokers in this building. The five that make it go.
Yeah. Can you name Jay Slam or?
Jessamine.
All right.
Yes.
So Salk went after. He What's went after Lydia? Locker first, then Laura. Lydia.
No, yeah. I'm not going after Lydia. I know better.
And then Stacy. Yeah. Whew, don't mess with Stacy. Don't mess with her.
She's going to rabbit punch.
Yes.
Bob.
Next question.
Next question.
All right. Have you ever eaten pizza backwards? Like what? Crust first? What kind of an animal does that?
Never.
That's
disgusting.
Howdy, when you were eating the pizza in bed the other day at the hotel room, you ever go crust first?
Yes, I often would go crust first. If I know I'm going to eat the crust, I'll go crust first.
Why?
Because I want to save the very best bite of every slice to be the last bite.
That's structural
issues,
though.
That's how I eat it.
Wouldn't that have structural issues? Like, wouldn't the pizza fall apart? Like,
I'm with you on that. I actually agree with Howdy. I always save the best for last. And Howdy, I think this is why you and I are prone to gaining weight, because it means you've got to eat everything on the plate to get up to that last bite, because the last thing you want to do is not eat the best bite.
Yes.
So you end up eating everything on the plate instead
really
of leaving
some.
That's
why it's really hard to be married, because she'll try and, like, jump in on the plate halfway through, and then now you've really messed things up.
You're like, look, I've organized this plate so that the last thing I eat is the best part.
I have
part.
Set up this meal so the last bite that I have is the very best
so hold on a
bite
second.
Of the meal.
You and
hold
I
on a
could
second.
Not see that more in lockstep.
You like a Red Mill burger, right?
Don't sure.
You like, so what is the best bite of the Red Mill burger?
Well, I mean, that whole bite's probably, I mean, the whole burger should roughly taste the same.
Okay.
It's more like when you've got a few things on your plate and you're like, okay, which of these ones do I like the best?
Mm. I'll do that on a burger, though. I will find, okay, this spot in this burger has the most bacon in this bite.
Yep.
So I'm going to work my way around to make sure that there's the cheese, the bacon, and the sausage. This bite is the very last bite that I take.
Totally true. Totally agree with that. You and I are in lockstep, Howdy.
Greg's really bored right now.
Yeah, he is.
Next question.
This would be a good story for SI.
We do have SI Eats now.
I'd love to see, I follow SI Eats on Twitter. I'd love to see how it would go when Salk signs up for farmersonly.com. Yeah, that'd be great. We'll get right on that.
Better hope you don't get any of Jake Locker's friends out there.
They're mad today. It's fine.
Next question.
I can handle them.
Wonder why. Yeah. Me can't throw, can't play, can't run, can't do anything.
I don't think I said it quite like that, but all right. No, you're right. He was a really successful quarterback.
Next question.
Jerks, what if your wife asked?
What?
Jerks, how long of a drive before a relationship becomes?
Bail out of that one.
Oh, no.
How long of a drive before a relationship becomes a long distance relationship?
If there are days you have to decide I can't afford time wise to go visit you, it's a long distance relationship.
Yeah, or money, gas wise,
right? True.
If a resource of yours is cut into and you cannot see this person because of a resource, it's long distance.
Isn't he amazing? Answer the question, jerk. Answer, Greg. Yeah. Isn't Howdy amazing?
Howdy, are you going to let Greg answer? He's our guest. He drove over here, but it's fine.
It wasn't long distance, so I wouldn't count that, you know.
What do you think? How far does that have to be?
I think anything that would eat into your work day.
It's your work day?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm so relieved to know I'm not the only one who eats my food that way. Saving the best for last. The struggle to share food is real. What is the bite of your Thanksgiving plate that you save? Stuffing, obviously. But whatever's best that day.
What do you think, Greg? You enjoy that hour?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Read Greg's article on Jake Locker. It'll be it's already available in the actual print edition of SI, but you can catch it at SI.com starting on Friday. Two stories in the issue this week. They do it every week still, right? That's still weekly?
Bi-weekly now.
Is it really?
As of this year, yeah.
I know that.
That gives us more space for stuff.
Thanks for
My bad.
Remember how we had that whole conversation about how it's hard for things to end well?
Yes.
I've done something to Lydia recently. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but she's been super disappointed in me for like a week or
we'll
so
work
now.
It out tomorrow.
Are you okay? What's up? It's baseball season. You and I should be on the same page.
We are. Hockey playoffs. Let's go.
It doesn't feel that way, Lydia. I gotta
admit,
likes
Jake Locker.
It doesn't feel that way.
Yeah, I do like Jake Locker.
She's team Jake Locker.
Barn.
Hey, tomorrow we'll be over at Safeco. Scott Service will be with us at 9:30. Look forward to talking to him in person. Hopefully the Mariners get a win tonight, so he'll be in an even better mood. We'll see you guys tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Till then, the hay.
in the barn.
Hey, everybody.
Yes. How you rocking? Rock getting along. A role play group? What would a role?
Get to the chopper!